14th. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago. I really appreciate you joining me today on RBN. RBN's website is republicbroadcasting.org. Please also visit spingola.com for a list of future guests and relevant links. And I also did something that I've been thinking about doing for some time. I created a Twitter account. I haven't tweeted yet, but anyway, it's up, and I guess that's something that is a good thing to do, but hopefully it won't take up a whole bunch of time. Also, please visit SpingolaSpeaks.wordpress.com, which is a site that one of our dear friends and listeners created, and he maintains that website, and I thank him very much for it. During the program, email your questions or comments to comment@spingola.com. Please remember, I do not access my regular email address during the program. Join others in the chat room by clicking on the chat room button on my website or by visiting spingola.chatango.com. I would like to extend my personal condolences to the family of Edgar Steele, who died this week while under the custody of the prison system. After being falsely accused and imprisoned. Very, very sorry to hear that. Not surprised, but very sorry to hear that. We have had Cindy Steele on the program several times, not recently, but anyway, our condolences to her and the rest of the family. We will take calls in the third hour when we open the phone lines at 800-313-9443. My guests today are Dr. Judy Wood, whose websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. She is the author of Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Dr. Wood has a B.S. in civil engineering, an M.S. in engineering mechanics, which is applied physics, and a Ph.D. in materials engineering science. My other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. Folks, welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you.
So we got Andrew. We got Dr.
Wood. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can. Thank you.
Great.
And we're all on Skype. And so the only issue with Skype is that when one person is talking, it cancels out, the other person. So we just need to keep that in mind. One time I decided with a friend that we were going to sing a duet at the beginning of a program. And, the only thing is that you can't sing a duet using Skype because, I ended up singing solo, which was probably pretty awful for the listeners.
You probably sang a duet or two solos in parallel.
Yeah, exactly. But it was interesting. It was an interesting way of learning exactly how Skype works, that it doesn't necessarily work that well when two people are talking at the same time. But anyway, welcome. I'm very happy to have you both on the program again. We haven't done this for a while, but given the time of year it is and the anniversary, this is most appropriate that we have you both on the program.
Okay. Well, thanks. It's an honor to be here. It's interesting that it's something that's per time of year. You know, we only think of 9/11 at this time, and we think of Christmas at, you know, that time, and think of something else at another time. It's like we're set up like clockwork.
I wonder if that's deliberate. I think it might be. But I think about 9/11 other than just around 9/11. I think about it a lot of other times. I think it was a watershed moment in history, and I think of all the things that have occurred since that happened. I mean, look at all of the things.
It changed everything.
It changed everything drastically. just as World War did, World War II did. I mean, these are big moments in time that you have to relate to everything else that goes on after the fact, not just when it happened, or not just around the anniversary date of September 11th. Andrew, your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there isn't really a day that goes by when I don't think about it. And, you know, I wouldn't say I get emails every day. I think Dr. Wood gets emails just about every day. But I get probably half of every day, you know, probably three or four times a week I'll get emails about 9/11 because of, you know, what I've put on my website and those things. You know, and this is obviously the 13th anniversary, and I've perhaps in myself felt a little bit more this year. I've needed to just push the boat out a little bit. I don't know, because this 13 number does seem to have a special significance for the people that planned and executed this event. And so perhaps that's made me think that maybe the 13th anniversary is somehow more, I don't know, I wouldn't say more important, but it seems more, I'm thinking about it more than perhaps this time last year, perhaps. I don't know why, but maybe it's just this number 13. I don't know.
Oh, yes, sure. I mean, it's pretty significant. And even 9/11 is a significant number.
And somebody is just, I'm about to post an article that somebody has just written about, you know, it focuses a little bit on the numerology, and also something that Dr. Wood and I have talked about in the, you know, and I think she's perhaps said this on either on your program or in other interviews, that we've talked both publicly and privately how we think that life has prepared us for dealing with the unravelling of the 9/11 cover-up. You know, Dr. Wood's experience in her life and some of my own experience in my life has enabled us, I think, kind of given us the toolkit to do what we've done in our different ways, both intellectually and practically, I think. And we've gone through various stages, I think, in our lives which have helped to prepare us for doing what we've been doing. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, Dr. Wood?
Oh, very much. That, you know, we wouldn't be where we were doing what we're doing if we hadn't been prepared to do it. And, yeah, definitely. You know, including my academic training.
Exactly.
Various people have written to me who haven't read the foreword to the book, where Professor Eric Larson points out that nothing could have prepared me better academically. But I have a bachelor's degree in civil engineering, master's degree in applied physics, and a PhD in materials engineering science. And my area of research has been to study phenomenon in materials. How could I miss it?
Sure.
And also with image analysis too. It's
right. And I was going to sort of just add on to that, in that I've had to develop quite a lot of solutions to things, you know, practical problems, I suppose, technological
patterns.
Problems, if you will. Well, that as well. I mean, that pattern matching or pattern recognition is a big part of problem solving, and also in computer science, you know, it's one of the big things in, for example, artificially intelligent systems is pattern recognition or pattern matching rather than recognition, perhaps. And so, but also just developing practical solutions to everyday problems, like, you know, just how can I do as many DVDs as I can in an hour without having to spend a lot of money, you know, those sorts of practical issues. And,
sure.
And I've tackled those things myself, and I've not really had to depend on other people to sort those things out for me.
Okay, folks, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
The IRS is a private corporation, not a government agency. Income tax is collected by voluntary compliance. To learn to unvolunteer or discontinue volunteering into the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com and immediately implement Strategy 1. The process must be repeated each and every time. paper, letter, envelope, presentment, etc. Always and forever. Failure equates to acceptance, subsequent resultant contract, and you pay or go to jail by your own consent and agreement contract. Avoid recontracting. Visit escapeharassment.com and implement Strategy 1 immediately. Bar lawyers and accountants won't help you. Why wait? Get Strategy 1 and immediately implement it to divorce the IRS today and forever. That's escapeharassment.com, Strategy 1, to be free from the IRS. Escapeharassment.com.
First Amendment privacy is rare. Kryptonite.com has data encryption software for your protection. Kryptonite.com keeps information safe from NSA spying, cloud data mining, identity theft, and corporate espionage with encryption protection giving you 100% privacy in conversations, data storage, and transmission. Keeping your free speech safe from data theft with the best encryption software in the market for easy-to-use, low-cost data security. Kryptonite.com, CryptoNyte.com.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead, pull the trigger.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at Stemgevity.com today. That's Stemgevity. Stemgevity.com. Or call now toll-free, 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs Stemgevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
Websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Her book is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. And our other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. And I would just like to say, and Andrew, I just love your book. I think it's wonderful. But one cannot just simply pick up Where Did the Towers Go and read it like they would any other book. Mm. It has to be studied. You cannot, you have to study it. It's the only way of really getting it is to study it. You, it's not a book that you just simply read. Would you agree with me?
Absolutely. I mean, and thank you very much for, reading my book and the articles in it, and also for actually keeping going with what you're doing and giving us this, essentially giving us this platform from which to, you know, to speak, because it's very important, because there is so little access to this information, and as you're fully aware, there's so few people that are actually, you know, interested in this now. You know, they accept, most people accept the official account or some version very close to that and all that's followed on, and it's absolutely horrendous.
Or the official diversion.
The official diversion. And I think, you know, Dr. Wood and I were talking probably for about an hour or so this morning, about our feelings about essentially, why are Dr. Wood and I doing what we're doing? Well, it's because there's a cover-up. It's because people don't know what we know, you know, and we're not talking about theories and stuff like that. We're talking about what we know and can prove. And I was having a conversation with somebody on Facebook last night about this, and they just said, oh, there's so many theories out there, and I've watched a load of them, you know, and I don't know what to believe. And this is one of these kind of mind control games, which is played on people, that you put things in this framework of belief, and not of knowledge. You know, you say, well, I believe this, I believe that, and, you know, let's have a debate about what each of us believes and all of this. And, you know, I think we've probably talked a little bit about this on the program before, but it's a huge, huge problem. I think it's far bigger than people realize. And
by far.
I mean, it's kind of, you know, and going back to Dr. Wood's book, it's very dangerous to the powers that be for several reasons. One is because of it unravels 9/11 in terms of what happened to the World Trade Center complex completely and conclusively. You know, you know what, having when you've read the book, you know that the only explanation is directed energy weapon of some kind, and you know the characteristics that weapon system has. But, you know, as well as that.
Well, can I insert something here?
Go on.
Sure.
one of the biggest, I want to make sure I said this, one of the biggest misunderstandings of my work is, you know, people compare thermite versus energy weapons. Or, you know, it's like, you know, saying a kitchen match versus some kind of liquid. You know, a kitchen match is a specific thing, some kind of liquid. There's a whole lot of different kinds of liquid. I start out what happened, and then you go to what was the destructive mechanism, and was it, you know, the mechanism, was it kinetic energy, was it thermal energy, or was it directed energy?
Yeah.
Those are categories.
Mm-hmm.
And so comparing a specific item within a category, like nukes or something, with a category is like apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
It makes no sense. So somebody's trying to, or someone says, well, of all the different kinds of direct energy weapons, I know what a laser pointer is. A laser pointer couldn't destroy the tower, so therefore let's, you know, say it couldn't be any kind of energy weapon at all.
Right.
Yes. That's one of the ways that it works. That, you know, they've tried to turn people away from actually looking at the evidence and going through it. As you say, in studying it, as you say, you need to study the book, and you need to study. Also, I've tried to study the cover up, which is what I was trying to sort of. You know, we were talking about that earlier today. But what's in Dr. Wood's book? When you've been through it and you've seen how it's constructed and how the data is put together, it actually changes the way that you think. And that's even more dangerous to the powers that be, because once you adapt and change your mode of thinking, then you become, it's like building up an armory. You know, you become resistant to psychological operations, or you become more resistant to it. If you truly study what's in that book, and you truly kind of take it into your understanding, you know, and your way of thinking, then you can begin to see that you're surrounded by psychological operations. It's just everywhere you look. You know, I mean, I was walking past a church today, and we've got this thing in the UK, it's called the Alpha Course, and it's kind of like, it's just a new way of packaging the Christianity. You know, and I mean, that, again, is another way of making people think a certain way, and there's just no way I would ever go into that.
Sure.
And it's just incessant, you know, and this all the things that have been in the news recently, which I'm not even going to mention. But then, what we were discussing earlier today is the cover up itself, and the way that is still going, and it is being carefully maintained. Carefully maintained by groups like...
absolutely, sure.
Yeah, absolutely, by groups like Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth.
The leaders of those groups.
And the leaders of those groups. And they're involved in a criminal cover-up. And under different circumstances, you know, they could be taken to court and... you know, they could be held accountable for attempting to pervert the course of justice. Because, you know, whether these people are being paid off or whether they're doing it because, you know, that whoever it is that's running the show has got a hold over them in some way, you know.
They're offspring.
Yeah, whatever it is, you know, they've got photographs of these people in uncompromising positions or whatever it is. They are involved in a criminal cover-up. And, you know, one of the prime movers is the A911 group. Sorry, Julia.
Sorry, if you want to insert some. It isn't, 9/11 wasn't that of an event. It's the cover-up that's enabled everything that's happened since. If there wasn't a cover-up, the case would be solved the next day. It's the cover-up that's allowed everything since to happen. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, and absolutely. And what we're also talking about today, one thing I probably, it's one of those things where, you know, you've been thinking about things for a long time, and then suddenly the words to describe it, you know, form in your mind, or that's how it works with me sometimes. And we were talking about, obviously, the 9/11 was a massive, massive trauma-based mind control event.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it went on for such a long time, for several days.
As I said, it was an attack on human consciousness.
And there's a lot that, you know, you could write a great deal about that in of itself. But I think what then happens is when you start to investigate this and you discover that people like Jim Fetzer, Richard Gage, Stephen E. Jones, David Chandler, David Ray Griffin, all these people, they, to a greater or lesser extent, have lied about the research. If they haven't lied about their own research, then they've lied about Dr. Wood's research. And you can also prove that as conclusively as you can prove what happened on 9/11.
The people you just mentioned have a copy of my book.
Right.
Yes,
right.
Indeed.
And what I was going to say is that
Andrew, I'm sorry. We do need
to. That's okay. We'll finish after the break.
To a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Our Dr. Judy Wood, her websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. She is the author of Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. Somebody in the chat room posted a comment. They said how they did it remains a minor issue. And I disagree. Tesla died in 1943. The U.S. government seized his body of work, created the National Security Agency, the CIA, the military-industrial entertainment complex, closely connected corporations have worked hand-in-hand with the government to develop behind closed doors Tesla's ideas, all under the control of a select few. And when I think of directed energy weapons, I think of Afghanistan. And for crying out loud, even a microwave oven is directed energy. Then you have to think of the electromagnetic issues and weatherized warfare, the hurricane in New York. I think of a lot of things that are going on that are just so significant that I have to totally disagree that how they did it remains a minor issue. It is the most important issue. Would you agree?
Yeah, if you want to stop it from happening again, you got to know what it is that happened.
Well, and also, who had the potential to do that? Who had the potential to use this energy?
It's more important is the objective to stop it from happening again, or is the objective revenge? And that's another interesting, you know, issue that I've looked into with, you know, right after 9/11, we gotta go get somebody. We gotta go beat up Saddam Hussein. We gotta go get bin Laden. You know, people grab their pitchforks together.
Sure.
Maybe before noon, my colleagues we gotta go take them out. We gotta take them all out. Sure. After the bombing of the coal, we got to go get somebody. Before they know what happened, they got to go get somebody. And with this business of, well, okay, it wasn't the official story, it was the official cover-up story, thermite or nukes or bombs or whatnot. Now we got to go get somebody.
Sure.
It's the same thing. And,
right.
You wonder how dogs get in the dog fights. They fight to the death, the fights they bet on.
Sure.
You get a dog going, and he goes into attack mode. And when an animal's in attack mode, or in, defense, fight for their life, they shut off logical thinking. So if you get people in revenge mode, it shuts off logical thinking. So you gotta go get somebody, grab your pitchfork, gotta go get someone. They shut off logical thinking. They're easy to manipulate. So if you have a cover-up story like thermite or nukes or whatever, now we gotta go get somebody. We gotta go investigate Ace Elevator. We gotta go do that. So people are in that revenge mode. They've shut off logical thinking.
Sure.
So it doesn't matter if it was the Bin Laden story or if it was a thermite story.
Right. It puts us in the same mode. Absolutely.
Yep. It accomplishes the same thing.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah, what I was going to try and say before the break was, which kind of links on to that, at least to some extent, is that what puts you into that state of, at least partly, is the trauma, is when you see these horrible events unfolding and people being killed, you essentially you've got probably one or two basic reactions that you're going to have, and one is going to be the revenge. and the shutting down of you're not going to sit there and first think, well, let's look at actually what happened, that's not most people's first instinct, certainly, and even in the weeks and months afterwards they may not come to that thought
sure,
process.
Because we were told what happened, so nobody really had to say, okay, well, what happened here, because we were told what happened, and then we were also told the unofficial version of what happened. So either way you look,
so we gotta go get somebody. Yeah,
sure.
It doesn't matter how it was done. We gotta go get somebody.
Sure.
And what I wanted to go on to say was that when you discover that you've got basically what I call the liars for 9/11 truth is what I've come to call them collectively. When you discover they are actually liars, and you can prove that. Then you can become traumatized again, because you can't really come to terms with this reality,
the enormity of it,
that you've got the horrible crime in the first place, the deception of the official story, and then these supposedly nice, cuddly people coming along and saying, oh yeah, we know the official story is not true, but we know that it was bombs or thermite or mini-nukes or this Dmitry Karlazov with his, nice, sort of authoritatively sounding, kind of suave Russian accent, that you get roped into. And then everyone that's disagrees with the official story just repeats that endlessly on Facebook and in blogs and everywhere. You can easily become extremely disillusioned with,
again.
And this again, and we certainly have spoken about this quite a lot, how we think, well, why can't people see through all of this? And another of the things we were discussing earlier today, and we said this before, is that if we look at Dr. Wood's research and the Where Did the Towers Go book and the videos that have been done by us and other people, if you get somebody who's, basically come from the official story and they've got a little bit of suspicion, and then they look at Dr. Wood's videos or the book, they generally, not exclusively in our experience, they get it straight away. This is just unbelievable, but I know that it's right. I know that what you've written is right here, and I know that what you're saying is true. However, the people that have been through the truther treadmill, or along the truther treadmill, they've got an extra layer of resistance, because they've got to then reject what they thought were good guys. Like Jones and Gage and all these other guys, they thought, well, good. And I went through this.
They've been trained not to look at my work.
Right. So they've got to basically chuck all that out again and say, oh, no, I've got to go through this whole process again. And that in of itself, some people are just not up to that, in my experience. They just can't do it. They're just, right. you know, they're just not going to get through it. And for other people, it's extremely traumatic and they just forget it all, you know, and they can just go and do their garden or whatever, you know, that is their way of dealing with it, you know.
There's another thing I've seen too is this with the, you know, creation of the internet, people who believe that you don't need to, have a background or anything. You just need an opinion and an internet connection. And Google is your friend.
How true.
So
how true.
Whatever you find on the internet, you're an expert. Now you know the answers.
Mm.
Sure.
That is also a big problem. And as we've seen and as we know, the internet is very much an information battleground in all kinds of ways. But the people that did 9/11, you know, they've got vast, perhaps even infinite resources, and they're perfectly capable of orchestrating coordinated disinformation groups to flood the internet with meaningless drivel to drown out the, you know, you've got this signal to noise ratio which they can ramp up, you know,
sure.
to a very high level of noise so that the signal barely gets through. And we've witnessed this go, well, I've certainly witnessed this going in phases where we seem to have periods of relatively good signal strength getting through and people, you know, seem to be getting, the understanding of the information. And then we get a lot of noise coming through and we're getting, oh, but, you know, I just read this blog and it said it was mini-nukes and I think it was that, you know, because Jim
sure.
Fetzer said it was,
sure.
you know. And
well,
I mean,
it seems Sorry. That whoever sets the agenda, whoever frames the debate and gets information out first, are the people that will have the benefit of being first, because then they can get a lot of people believing in what they're saying, because they have actually framed the debate, what they want people to believe. And it's just like, and I'm going to use an analogy, it's like the vaccine movement. You have a lot of doctors, you know, the AMA and everybody saying, oh, you have to get your vaccines, you got to get your vaccines, you got to get your vaccines, without ever looking at the science and without ever looking at what is really happening. No scientific evidence that vaccines are beneficial in the least. But you have all these people believing it because these people got the information out first, and they got it out through organized criminality, institutionalized medicine. And now you have to fight it with real hard science. And that's what I see Dr. Wood doing. She is fighting the framed debate with hard science. And it's an uphill battle.
Nobody looks at it. People have been trained not to look at it, to reject
sure.
it. You look up my name, and then with another search term, idiot, lunatic,
bat, a lot of discrediting.
Crazy.
Sure, absolutely. All righty, we are going to a quick 3-minute break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood. Her websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Her book is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson, the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. And his website is checktheevidence.com. And I understand that, Andrew, you have to leave after the first hour.
I can stay for longer if, you know, you both like me to stay on for longer. I haven't got any commitments. I just thought there was maybe something else happening after the first hour, so I don't mind staying on.
Okay. Let's talk just briefly about the QTAM suit that you filed. And this is something that we talked about a long time ago. Well, when you were my guest, I believe probably in, I started having you on the program, Dr. Wood, in 2011. And you had filed a lawsuit. You are the only individual who has filed a lawsuit.
With respect to the buildings,
mm-hmm.
the report on the buildings, Morgan Reynolds filed one about the false assumption that there were planes. They just said, well, let's assume there were planes, and went on. He dealt with that. But yeah, about the report on the buildings. And it was sort of an open and shut case. And why was it dismissed? Well, it was dismissed, it seems, because there was no, public support of it. If only five people support it, why would the judges want to stick their necks out and get, suicided on the way home from work the next day?
I think it might be worth just covering for those, because we don't know how many people who are listening are familiar with the details of the case. Obviously, we're very familiar with it, and
sure.
I think if we just ran through that, perhaps just very quickly.
Okay. Yes, I think that would be beneficial.
It was to do with the technical reports. I mean, if I just may introduce that very briefly, in that a lot of people are aware of the 9/11 Commission report, which was this 500-page novel which they wrote about 9/11, and that was published, I think, in 2003. But over and above that, there was the NIST, which is the National Institute for Standards and Technology. They were given a mandate from Congress to produce a set of technical reports which were meant to analyze and explain.
Yeah, they were to determine why and how the towers collapsed. That was their
assignment. That was their brief, wasn't it? And they, to do that, they employed, I think, what was it, 23 contractors, was it? Private companies?
Yep.
To look at all the aspects of how the buildings were, destroyed, as we would say, they would say collapsed. But we know that they were destroyed and they didn't collapse. And those companies took money, public money, to produce technical reports. And therefore, when, another scientist looks at those technical reports and can prove scientifically that they were false, and that company should have known with their own expertise, if they were being intellectually honest, that that science was fraudulent. When you could prove that, you could then take that company to court and say, look, you produce this report, you've got scientific expertise which the public has paid money for you to use, and you haven't used it. Therefore, you can be sued either by the government or by an individual for not producing that, and you sue them under what was called the DQA, or the Data Quality Act. And so if you want to take that up.
Yeah, that what gets put out there in a government report needs to be correct. They can omit stuff, but they can't knowingly put in false information. Also, we can't sue the government, but we can sue contractors of the government. And we had a brilliant lawyer, Jerry Liepart, who discovered this avenue. It's sort of like one hole in the system that we could get through. And it's called a whistleblower case, the QTAM case. You need to blow the whistle. So I submitted a request for corrections to NIST, informing them that these contractors had given them a bum steer and listed various things that were wrong about their report. And namely, the tipping top of Tower 2 appears to violate the laws of physics if it tips as a rigid body and stays a rigid body, because it starts to tip and it stops tipping. And they had a diagram of that in their report. And I said, well, it violates laws of physics. And NIST answered back saying, no, it doesn't. Our analysis doesn't violate the laws of physics because we didn't analyze the collapse.
Mm. Yes.
We analyzed the building while it was still standing. And so it was obeying the laws of physics while it was still standing.
So in other words,
they admitted fraud.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Well, the other thing, too, is that it's public money. You're talking about taxpayer money that was spent for these people to create a bunch of lies, and those are called false claims, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
Which is against the law.
They filed a false report to get paid for it. Yeah, and knowingly filed a false report. Now, we have developers and manufacturers of energy weapons. That company had the largest number of people working on the NIST report.
Really?
They would not only be able to recognize what technology was used, but they'd know whose technology was used. And I wanted to put them under oath.
That was Applied Research Associates, wasn't it?
Yep.
ARA. So they're a big military industrial defense contractor, and they were actually employed to I think, how many elements did they do? Was it a couple of things they did, or was it just the...
They had the most number of people who were who were on the thing. And also they had, and probably still have, a contract with the U.S. government to know anything about every weapon of mass destruction that exists, you know, on planet, off planet, you know, or is being developed. So it's
now, what is the name of that company again?
Applied Research Associates.
Okay.
And so it's their job to be able to identify a technology. So here they are working on the this report. You know, they're wading through the piles of dust, and you know, it's their job to understand what technology was used. But they didn't, of course, say anything about it.
They didn't raise their hand and say, "Oh, I know what this. I know what happened here."
Right.
When I brought this up, the conflict of interest stuff with NIST, in my response to them, they said, "Oh, we didn't know that they were developers and manufacturers of energy weapons." But even so, then I gave them the proof, and then they came back and said, "Well, we specifically told them in their contract they were not to tell us what happened."
Yeah, yeah.
They're only to do what we told them to do. They weren't to tell us what happened.
They were only to do the analysis, but not give us conclusions. I think that was something like that they said, wasn't it?
Yeah, and then SAIC was contracted to enter equations in Microsoft Word.
Yeah, that's Science Applications International Corporation, who are huge benefactors of the black budget.
And they're good at PSYOPs.
Yeah, and they were also in charge of Ground Zero security from 12th of September, I think, weren't they?
Yeah, onward.
Yeah, onward, yeah, for the site.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So, you know, and when I brought these things up in our UK group, and this is how, you know, the people might think, you know, 9/11, it happened in the US, and therefore all the cover-up effort and so on is going to be in the US. No. It's international. It is international, and I could give people several examples of this, the best of which is because I'm in the UK. You know, we had a UK 9/11 truth group, which I was involved with between about 2005 and late 2007. And this is when Dr. Wood's Ketam case, you know, got going by the end, I think it was unsealed in late 2007, was it?
Or, yeah, on the 12th of September.
2007, well, there you go.
But it was submitted in April.
In April, yeah. So I was able to write a press release about it, which I put onto our UK forum. But there was another guy on there called Tony Gosling. As soon as I put that post onto the forum, or within, you know, a few hours, he moved it into the controversies section. And I said, "Why have you moved this into the controversies section?" He said, "Well, you know, it's controversial." I said, "No, it isn't. These are court documents. You know, you
exactly.
can go and read them."
Wow. All righty. We are at the top of the hour. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour, so stay with us. And our guests today, Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Welcome back. This is Deanna. This is our second hour. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood. Her websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. She is the author of Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Dr. Wood has a BS in Civil Engineering, an MS in Engineering Mechanics, which is Applied Physics, and a PhD in Materials Engineering Science. My other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. And we've had some questions in the chat room. People, of course, always want to know who did it. They want to know who did it. Another question is, have other scientists come on board and confirmed what you have said in your book? And I think, of course, that science has been totally institutionalized in this country. But your thoughts on that, Dr. Wood?
There's quite a few people who have contacted me who are engineers, and it's this, you know, some that are like real tearjerker of emails that I've gotten, because I get so much idiot email that when I get ones where somebody's actually read my material or paid attention to my work and understands it, and is an engineer, it really, you know, feels good.
Of course. Absolutely.
I mean, the inevitable who did it question comes up, and really, I don't think we're the people to ask. You know,
Dr.
Wood is not the person to ask.
Yeah.
Because essentially...
That's what I had the court case for.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, we know that there's been a cover-up. Pretty much anyone who's looked into this, who's gone beyond the official story, has, you know, found out there is a cover-up, you know, whichever stage they've got to with that, which means that that cover-up hasn't happened by accident. You know, that's been orchestrated. So when you've got a cover-up on this magnitude, it's going to be extremely difficult to actually find out who has done it. I mean, my response to that question is, I don't know who did it, but I think tacking on to what we were saying earlier on, I think we know who knows who did it, and those are some people within Science Applications International Corporation. I couldn't tell you who in that corporation would know who did it, who knows who did it, but those are the people that have got more information than we have, or at least they've got access to that information. They've got a chain of command or something to the people that did 9/11. So you want to be writing to people in ARA and SAIC and asking, you know, who did 9/11? And of course, we all know the sort of response you're going to get, because let's face it, who's going to admit to having any knowledge about 9/11? You know, who's going to admit to knowing about the technology that was used to destroy the World Trade Center, when that technology could be used to completely transform the whole world, you know, completely? You know, and Dr. Wood and myself, we know that this is a possibility with this technology. It's a technology that, if it was used in an appropriate way, would give us abundance in everything. It would give us...
Of course, free energy. It would.
Yeah, absolutely.
We could have electricity without paying the local electrical bill. We would not be facing smart meters. We would not have weather warfare using the weather.
You'd be able to solve all the environmental problems, because, you know, whatever scheme that you devise which needed energy, you'd have as much energy as you needed to, you know, make that scheme work in the way that it needed to work, because it's the energy which is the baseline of, you know, all the limiting factors of all the engineering schemes that we have, just about. So this is why this is such an important issue, and it is, as I say, you know, we said earlier on, somebody said, oh, it doesn't matter what happened, you know, people say, oh, it doesn't matter what happened, we just know that the official story is wrong. Well, it's actually vitally important that we do know what happened, and essentially, because it links into the energy question, and, you know, I always say this, and once you get into that territory, then, you know, it becomes even more game-changing than you thought it was initially. And we can clearly see the energy connection, not only in Dr. Wood's book and the evidence which she's put in there and in the Keytown case, but also in the actions of people around, you know, that are in the cover-up, that are part of the cover-up. People like Jim Fetzer, Stephen E. Jones, for example, specifically Stephen E. Jones, his field of research in the 1980s was in a field of physics called low-energy nuclear reactions, more commonly known as cold fusion, which was a term that researchers did not like. And that particular term that researchers did not like, cold fusion, was in fact coined by Stephen E. Jones himself and a colleague who goes by the name of Paul Palmer. So that is a fact. That's not a theory. That is a fact. And people need to investigate and talk about those facts and expose these villains for what they are. And that also takes us to the Ketam case, but again, because when that request for correction that Dr. Wood briefly discussed was put into the system in April 2007, I think it was April the 16th when NIST posted it on their website, wasn't it? If I remember rightly. 2007, round about then anyway. When
the request for correction, it was in March.
I know it was logged on this website, I think, on April the 16th, but it was sent in March. 3 weeks after that, we saw Stephen E. Jones, Richard Gage, Bob McElvain, and others file their own request for correction. And that, of course, talked about the buildings being blown up. Curiously, if you go and do keyword searches within that RFC, it does not mention the word thermite as a separate word. It doesn't talk about thermite. And indeed, in their follow-up supplementary request, they also didn't mention their own thermite research. So if they're so convinced and had at that time been talking about thermite for at least 18 months publicly in a number of presentations, they're convinced that that is important in explaining the destruction of the World Trade Center. Why wasn't that research mentioned in their request for correction document? And I would say the answer to that, as I understand it, is because they knew it was false. They knew it was a lie. And they wouldn't want to have been caught lying in a court.
It's a federal crime to defraud the government.
Right.
Yeah, it's okay for them to lie to us, but we cannot lie to them.
Correct.
The government, right.
Correct. And so that proves to me, in my mind, that Stephen E. Jones knows exactly what he is doing. And he's known exactly what he's doing probably since the day he came onto the scene in 2005, I think in August 2005, when he first started talking about 9/11. So it's vitally important that people know these facts, because without the knowledge of these facts, they won't understand this aspect of 9/11, you know, which is hugely important. I think it's more important than the political ramifications myself, you know. So, and this, as I say, this cover-up extends to the UK, because the person that I mentioned, Tony Gosling, who ran this forum, he did not want this posted on the forum. You know, if he could have, he would have deleted it, but he knew, because I was one of the other moderators on this forum, he knew that if he deleted it, it would have been a real red flag, so he had to move it to this controversies area. So it was a form of soft censorship on this forum, which has gone on to this day, you know.
I think, do you have to be a member in order to see that area of the forum?
I know, I'm not sure, maybe you did. I think you tried to move it into a members-only area or something at one time, you know. And then, you know, you get other people kind of helping out with the cover-up. For example, we've got this new...
Okay, we need to hold that over until after the break. We will be back in 3 minutes, and then let's pick up that subject on the other side. All righty, welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guests are Dr. Judy Wood. Her websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11 Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. Alrighty, you were talking about part of the cover-up, part of the other part of the operation. And I was thinking about Stephen Jones. I was watching a video, and it was at a meeting, and they were voting on something. And he raised his hand, and then he looked. He was on a panel, there was a table, maybe 10 people at the table. And he looked down as if to say, come on, guys, raise your hand. And they all raised their hand. I mean, it was so orchestrated. So you could see that was the hidden message.
Did they know what their hands were being raised for?
Exactly.
Just raising their hand because that's what everybody else is doing.
Sure.
Peer pressure.
Yes, you're going to go off.
This, I think, you're absolutely right to focus on that particular event, because it was, you know, both a psychological operation on those people there and those watching, and it was a cover-up in motion in terms of getting people to fall into line, because what, as I understand it, what that vote was about as, was to whether those scientists thought that they discovered nuclear effects in Pons and Fleischmann's cold fusion experiments, you know, whether they just thought it was a you know, some kind of fraud or a mistake or something like that.
And whether they should pursue, keep looking in that area or shut down that area, that line of research.
Right. And they voted to not continue with that line of research, as I understand it. That's what that was for. So they wanted to shut down inquiry into this energy phenomenon that Pons and Fleischmann had been investigating. Now, they didn't fully understand what
that.
It was.
Right. Let's not look at that. Why would we be interested in that kind of thing? Okay, right. Everyone that doesn't want to look at it, raise your hand.
Right. And I mean, you can see he's done exactly the same sort of thing with Dr. Wood's research when he talked about it being space beams. You know, we've written a bit about this, or I've written a bit about this.
How many people believe it was space beams?
Yeah. You know, this is still what happens. This is still what people post on forums and all this kind of thing. They don't explore what happened with Jones. They don't talk about that. And it's like he's got his own little maintenance team. And I'm mentioning that because of an event which happened, not an event, but some correspondence which I received earlier this year, and I've written all this up, and I won't go into all the gory details, but basically I was contacted, I think, in January this year by some British woman going by the name of Caroline Louise. And she claimed that she was interested in the history of this 9/11 scholars group, which we've mentioned very briefly, I think, which is how I came into contact with Dr. Wood, through this group that Jim Fetzer and Stephen E. Jones formed at the end of 2005. And I ended up realizing that was an intelligence gathering outfit, essentially. They were trying to just basically keep people, tabs on people who were looking at 9/11 and had a bit of a brain, you know. And that's
what
I've written
about. And
then it
cozy up to those who are going somewhere so you can have guilt by association.
Right. And she claimed, this Caroline Louise, claimed that she was trying to document the breakup of this group and how, you know, some people had said it was thermite and some people had said it was directed energy weapons. And she thought this was a hugely important kind of thing to document. And I wrote back to her and said, well, look, I've already done that. I've already documented it, and it's in my free book. You can go and read it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote back to me a few times and said, oh, well, you know, from my point of view, you know, I think there's some things that haven't been covered or something, you know.
Sure.
So I said, look, this is not a point of view. You can go and read the emails, you know.
Sure.
You can read what people actually said to me, and then you can listen to the audios, you know, and stuff like that. So it's not a point of view. It's actually what happened. You know,
sure.
Documented.
I was a member of that group.
So, yeah. And so, anyway, what then happened was, a couple of weeks later, she wrote to me and said, allegedly she was going away to document the breakup of the scholars group. But the next email she wrote me after this one that I'd indicated the things I just said, she wrote and said, oh, you've got an article on your website about Stephen E. Jones, and you say that he described cold fusion as crazy and delusional, or Pons and Fleischmann as crazy and delusional. I thought, I haven't got an article which says that, because I knew I hadn't written those words. Now, what I'd actually got on my website was an article by somebody else. It was actually by Russ Gerst, and he'd actually paraphrased.
Or is it C.B. Brooklyn?
Russ is, and one was C.B. Brooklyn.
Oh, okay.
And he'd actually paraphrased what Dr. Eugene Maloff had said in his book. He paraphrased it, and it was essentially what they'd said. Jones had said that, you know, Pons and Fleischmann science was crazy or delusional. It was something very close to that which had actually been said. But the point was that this article was about Stephen E. Jones, and it wasn't an article which formed part of the history of the scholars group. This was something separate I had on my website. So I pointed this out to her, that she'd claimed that she was writing this history of the scholars group, yet what she'd written to me about was nothing to do with the scholars group. It was about Jones. And then, about a week after that, she wrote to me again. And she said, oh, you've got an article on your website, and it said that Stephen E. Jones sabotaged cold fusion research. And I thought, I haven't got an article on my website that says that. And so I went and checked. And the article on my website that said that Stephen E. Jones had sabotaged Cold Fusion, yes, I did have that article, but I didn't write it. It wasn't my words. It was by C.B. Brooklyn. And that wasn't about the breakup of the Scholars Group either. So this British woman had written to me claiming that she was interested in the breakup of the Scholars Group, yet the two follow-up emails that she wrote to me were specifically about Stephen E. Jones's role in the Cold Fusion science debacle or cover-up, whatever you want to call it. And I later then discovered, with a little bit of help from somebody else we know and a bit of searching, that she'd also been posting YouTube comments on videos about Stephen E. Jones 2 weeks before she first contacted me. So what became clear to me was that this woman had, either under her own steam or at the request of somebody else, I suggest this is Jim Fetzer that orchestrated this, been asked to do some damage limitation for Stephen E. Jones. The reason being that it was becoming more widely known that Jones had this role in helping to cover up Cold Fusion, you know, sort of phenomena and research, and also helping to cover up aspects of 9/11 research. That was becoming more widely known, and so there was a need to put out some information which sounded good to help protect Jones. That was basically the conclusion that I came to. And this particular woman, whose real name was Caroline Leach, and unlike Dr. Judy Wood, she does have her own Wikipedia page, which we can mention a little bit about that in a minute, I think. This Caroline Leach person, she wrote a book about Lewis Carroll. Now, Lewis Carroll is a British author.
Right.
Who wrote the Alice in Wonderland. And when you read the Wikipedia page about Caroline Leach, it comments on this book about Lewis Carroll that the book has been said by some to be an attempt to rewrite history. Now, isn't that interesting? Because when I first heard from this Caroline Louise lady, my intuition told me that she was attempting to rewrite history because of the way that she said she wanted to document the history of the Scholars Group.
Sure.
And that's clearly not what she wanted to do. She wanted to rewrite it. And so
sure.
That's one example of the kind of granularity, if I can use that word, of the cover-up.
You know, right.
I'm just some guy in the UK with a website with, you know, half a brain.
Sure.
Writing about 9/11, you know,
sure.
Gets a few hits on his website. This has to be micromanaged.
Absolutely. All righty, we're going to a 3-minute break. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood. Her website, its sites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Her book is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. Dr. Wood, with regard to your book, I'm fascinated by science. I'm fascinated by graphs and charts, and I like you need visualization. Because this was such a visual event, you need to know where things were, where the buildings were situated, what was next to it. Just in the front of the book. The book comes with a card. It's probably about 9 inches by 7 inches, maybe 10. I didn't measure it. But it's double-sided. And, I mean, it's just people could spend an hour just looking at this card, just looking at where things were. You have a little list on, you pack so much information in one area more than anybody that I know. I mean, you just scrunch it all in so that you know where the Bankers Trust is, you know where WTC7 was, the post office. Everything is right there. And then when people open the book, the first photo that they see, the first image that they see is the bubbler, which is so, I mean, it's just an amazing photo. It's just an amazing photo. It's the same photo as what is on the front cover. But some of the chapters, the science chapters, excuse me. You talk about the billiard ball example. You talk about just everything, any question that anybody would have, any scientific question that anybody would have, you've covered it. You've talked about the jumpers. You've talked about the bathtub. You've talked about seismic impact. And anybody who reads your section 6, on the seismic impact is going to know without a doubt that controlled demolition did not bring those buildings down. Pounding on the
kinetic
desk.
Kinetic energy. Yeah. Kinetic energy is ruled out as a destructive mechanism. The buildings were not beaten to death.
Exactly. And if they had fallen, as in a controlled demolition, it would have destroyed the bathtub. It would have flooded Manhattan. It would have...
The underground.
Exactly. Yes.
And the buildings weren't cooked to death either. So it wasn't thermal energy as a destructive mechanism.
So it wasn't a bomb. And it wasn't many nukes.
Right. Bombs go boom. It wasn't anything that goes boom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in a big way, there's no shockwave. Also, if you're blowing up stuff, you get junk shooting out to the sides, all the adjacent buildings would look machine gun fired. And that didn't happen.
Right. Right.
But the most astounding thing is that cover picture, the bubbler, at the time that picture was taken, there were 14 people in stairwell B from like the second, third, and fourth floor in that area who later looked up and saw blue sky and then walked out on their own.
Which is amazing. And if it had been controlled demolition, they would have been under...
Blown up and burned up and...
Exactly.
So they were beaten to death. They weren't cooked to death.
Right.
And they didn't sit on top of a nuke saying, ride them cowboy.
Exactly.
To say that there's a nuke in the basement right under them is so crazy.
Right,
you can't sit on top of a nuke.
Exactly. You're talking about Willie Rodriguez, yes. Yes.
Or Dmitry Kalasov, and also Fetzer and so forth. It seems like there's a portion of the evidence that needs management that Thermite isn't doing a very good job answering. So, you know, if you don't like the lie behind door number one, they show you the lie behind door number two. If you don't like lie behind door number two, they show you the lie behind door number three. They keep you looking behind their doors so you don't turn around and see the wide open field of evidence right behind you.
Sure. I was going to mention something, but I forgot what it was.
I'll mention something about the billiard ball example.
Yes, go ahead.
How that originated. On 9/11, when I saw the buildings coming apart on the TV set, you know, it looked like, this is ridiculous. You know, they're pulling a joke on us. I mean, that's not a building collapse. You know, I didn't say that, but I had this look on my face like, this can't be for real. You guys buying this? You know, it was that expression. I looked around the room, the faculty conference room, and everyone's taking it in seriously. I'm like, gee, you know, am I on a foreign planet or what? Why don't they see what I see? So I was struggling with that and went up to my office. And, you know, I went through these quick calculations of timing of stuff coming down. And if something's got to hit something else, it would hit something else. You got this kind of leapfrog timing with everything turning to dust. You don't have enough energy to turn the building to dust. And you don't have enough energy to mash the ground either. But ignoring that and just looking at the timing itself, it still is, you know, like a whole minute it would take. It's incredible, the amount of time it went away, just frothed up into dust. There wasn't any, you know, you think of an avalanche, something gets started here, which moves something else there, which moves something else there. It's this back and forth, or like a big pile of something would be settling. And, okay, so then I translated it into billiard balls. innocent billiard balls, not this horror scene of bodies flying and jumping out windows and buildings, you know, being destroyed, but just innocent billiard balls. And with these, you know, very simple calculations, I went two doors up to a colleague and asked him, you know, what am I doing wrong here? And he looked at me like I was having a senior moment, like, because it was so simple. But you put that in terms of the World Trade Center, and they can't think. But you put it in terms of billiard balls, and they can think.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned the power of that. You start out talking about the timing of
the
building coming apart.
Fall rate, okay.
Yeah, of the building coming apart itself. People can't go there. They can't deal with that. It's too traumatic. But you talk about innocent billiard balls doing the same thing, just as timing devices. They're not hitting each other, just timing devices.
Sure.
They can handle that. And they can follow, and that's very, very simple. But if they get those same equations and try to apply it to the real, you know, building, the brain shuts down. So that's why I went with this billiard ball example. It allows people's brains to work. They can think through the problem.
Right.
And then go back to apply it to, you know, the actual building. And another example I thought of that day is if you turn just a quarter mile tall building, or a little over a quarter mile, turn on its side. It's a quarter mile length. What is the, you know, approximately is it, people can run a 4-minute mile, you know, for world's record. It's a little bit faster than that. But so that means it'll take 1 minute to run a quarter of a mile, which is the length of the building. So for 1 minute, you know, with the building on its side, think of somebody running down the length of the building.
Sure.
The building came apart in like 8 to 10 seconds.
Exactly.
And it would take somebody a minute, a full, you know, 60 seconds to run that distance at world record speed.
Wow.
I think the other good example is the hand clapping, isn't it? With the,
you
know, clap your hands 100 times a second. And I think this is going back a few years that there's a YouTube video you can find with the world record clapper, and he can clap his hands, I think, what is it, 70 times?
He can actually do it, but he's doing this trick of double clapping, kind of.
Yeah, he's really developed his technique to an absolute kind of pinnacle of clapping technique. It's and then if you work it out, the 110 floors disappeared in, you know, essentially about 10 seconds.
Yes.
So you imagine you're clapping your hand once for each floor that disappeared. And this, and then matching
it's
this
like
up with this video.
It's like 10 times a
second. Yeah. Yeah.
Normal people can't do that unless you
right.
have this special technique. That it just doesn't work. And you can't mash the building up that fast. If you were indeed mashing the building up that fast, the stuff would have to get out of the way, squirt out of the way at an increasing speed as the building comes down to the point that's in excess of Mach 2 near ground level. So
sure.
if the stuff is being shot out at Mach 2, all of the adjacent buildings would look machine gun fired. And that
Absolutely.
Didn't happen.
Yes.
And I think this is one of the elements which is very dangerous for the powers that be when people start thinking about these phenomena. And going back to one of the things that we've mentioned briefly a couple of times is the nuclear, the idea of nukes. Oh, I think it was nukes, you know.
Sure.
You know.
Spin the dial.
I'm going to go to another break, so maybe we'll talk about this after the break.
Okay, we'll pick it up with nukes in 3 minutes. Be right back. Alrighty, we are back. This is Deanna. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. And remember that we will take calls in the next hour. Pick it up from where we left off about, I was reading about nukes in the chat room. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous to even
right.
consider nukes. And, I mean, if you just think about it, it's just,
crazy.
And it's people are just trying to jump to the answer. I wonder if we have this culture of multiple choice testing, you know, under time pressure, that the name of the game is jump to the right answer as fast as you can. Don't think about the process. Don't learn how to solve problems.
Right.
And
we've all grown up with multiple choice.
Right, and few people know how to understand the mechanism of something, and that's really where it starts. When you determine what happened, you need to then look at the destructive mechanism. Was it kinetic energy? Was it thermal energy? Was it directed energy? Now, kinetic energy is beating the building to death, you know, with a wrecking ball, with bombs, with a missile, with, you know, a gravity collapse. Thermal energy, was the building cooked to death? Did it burn up? Did it melt? You know, was it glowing red hot? Directed energy, as I described, it's a very broad category. You direct it. You tell the energy to do something differently than it normally does. You instruct it to do something. And one example, here's one example of that is like, you know, a magnetic field. You know, so something does something in there. You're not touching it physically. You're not hitting it with something. You're not, you know, cooking it. It's a different kind of action. And gravity
and
is an example.
Instantaneous.
Well,
right?
it's the field's there or it's not there. And you can have different fields and they can interfere. Like, you know, magnetic field or a gravity field. Gravity is acting on things, you know, continually, on the planet. And it decreases as you go out away from the planet. But also you have, magnetism and there's also electricity. And it turns out those three things interact with each other. And what we see as the destructive mechanism, I call it magnetic electrogravitic nuclear reactions. It involves magnetism, electricity, gravity, and it causes nuclear reactions.
Okay.
That's in my book. And that's in my book, and it's interesting that the mini nukes or mini micro nano nukes story came out and was really being pushed hard about a year after my book came out.
Interesting. And thermite, you talk about, I believe it's on your website, that if they had used thermite, that the Twin Towers would have looked like two giant sparklers, 4th of July sparklers. And that is not what they look like. I mean, you have some of the best graphics on your website. And I do have those graphics linked on the schedule page. The page that, that you call the AHA photos. And if people just follow those photos down, I mean, they're just going to get so much of an, such a big education. I mean, somebody mentioned, why haven't you added any more to your website since the publication of your book? Well, what are you going to add? You've got all the science there. You've got all the photos there. You've got all these answers.
I don't need to redact anything.
Add? Exactly. You don't need to redact anything. You're not going to change your mind about anything because it's all right there. No redaction needed.
Right.
I can't resist, saying what was missing on 9/11 with nukes or thermite.
Sure.
Let's see.
Blinded by the light.
It's true.
Yeah, blinded by the light?
That's right, and the heat as well. As heat is the factors are the noise, the light, and the heat. You know, those are obvious factors which everyone should know, really, or very nearly everyone, are associated with, you know, nuclear weapons being detonated, or, you know, incendiaries going off, or explosives going off, or, you know, the sorts of quantities of explosives that would be required to destroy those buildings are going to generate huge quantities of sound, you know, very loud. A huge sort of pyrotechnic display and a huge amount of heat. And we didn't see any of those things. You know, and so for Jim Fetzer to come on recently and say, oh, I think Dr. Wood is wrong and it was actually mini nukes, he doesn't specify what these mini nukes were. But the point I was going to make was that, as I've said this several times before in other broadcasts, but I'll say it again now, is the reason why the nuke story has been pushed so hard is that it's clear from the evidence, if you get to study it, that nuclear effects were there. I mean, one of the key factors is this substance called tritium, which, of course, was discovered in great abundance in the cold fusion experiments, something that Stephen E. Jones knows all too well. Tritium is something that Stephen E. Jones does not want to talk about in relation to 9/11. because Stephen E. Jones is a physicist, so he can't say that it was a nuclear device going off which destroyed the towers. That would be ridiculous because he's a physicist. Jim Fetzer can say it because he's a philosopher, so he can get away with saying it in people's eyes.
Oh, sure.
You know? So they've had to push this nuke story, right? And I've pointed out repeatedly that this cannot be true for the reasons that we've just said. And we had a good example of this in a couple of years ago now, when Jim Fetzer got together with this magazine publisher called Jeff Prager, and they produced this document called American Nuked on 9/11, or I can't remember the exact title. And this is a 100-page long document, you know, very well sort of published, very well designed graphically, very appealing to look at. And it was about 100 or 200 pages long. A lot of it was copied directly from Wikipedia.
From my website, too.
Yeah, and from Dr. Wood's website, not credited. Morgan Reynolds' articles were copied into this locked stock and barrel with no credit. You know, you can go and trace this down. And I had a bit of an email exchange with Jeff Prager about why the nukes thing was ridiculous. And I was polite enough to him. I didn't really know who this guy was, but I knew he was not telling the truth about nukes. You know, and I was pretty sure he knew he wasn't telling the truth. So when I repeatedly pointed out to them these facts about the light, the amount of light, the amount of heat, etc., he wrote back to me, and he said to me, and I'll quote, I've got this on the screen because I wanted to read it. This is, again, is how the cover-up works and how these people react, I think, when their cover is blown. You know, their intellectual cover is blown. He wrote to me after I'd insisted that this couldn't be nukes. He said, "You're a blithering, brainless, molecularly and neurologically challenged idiot. You're known to the detectives and the police force in your community as a complete idiot. You're known on the internet as the moron of morons, the man's moron. For goodness sakes, uranium at 93 becquerels per kilogram with strontium, barium and thorium, equally off the chart, spells fission, you twit." That's what he wrote to me.
What?
So why would somebody put that vitriol in an email to me when I'm saying, no, this wasn't nukes, this wasn't hot nukes, this wasn't fission nukes, it wasn't micronukes, it wasn't that at all. There was a nuclear process involved, but it wasn't any of that. And the curious thing is that in this document he produced on one particular page, and you can find all these references on my website if people want to actually go and look up all the details, on one particular page he had a piece of metal which this picture was mixed in with pictures of wreckage from the World Trade Center, but I recognized this picture, and this picture was from one of John Hutchison's metal samples, yet that was put into this document without any attribution. But I don't think there was even a caption of it. So they were trying to associate this image from John Hutchison's experiments with nuclear explosions or nuclear mini-nukes or whatever it was at the World Trade Center, which I thought was very, very interesting, because this is the kind of thing that Jim Fetzer does, and Jeff Prager obviously got roped into this somehow. And I would characterize it, well, obviously at one level it's a criminal cover-up, but it's a kind of intellectual vandalism. You know, that's what this amounts to. It's intellectual vandalism. That's what these people are up to in this way. You know, and Jim Fetzer, Stephen E. Jones, Richard Gage, that's what these guys are into. They're into intellectual vandalism and trying to lead people away from this very important, you know, hugely world-changingly important conclusions.
Sure, with $600,000 billboards in New York City. Alrighty. Okay, we're at the top of the hour. We will be back at 6 minutes after the hour, and we will take your phone calls. Welcome back. This is Deanna. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood. The websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Her book is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Dr. Wood has a BS in Civil Engineering and MS in Engineering Mechanics, which is Applied Physics, and a PhD in Materials Engineering Science.
My other guest is Andrew Johnson. He is the author of 9/11, Finding the Truth. His website is checktheevidence.com. We do have some callers lining up. Just a couple of quick questions from the chat room. There was, you mentioned, Andrew, about a nuclear process being involved, but it wasn't nukes. And somebody also asked about reports of nuclear fallout. Could we have some? Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I state in my book, magnetic electrogravitic nuclear reactions. That is a type of nuclear reaction, and it's the same type of nuclear reaction we see in what used to be called cold fusion.
Okay.
And but it's not a nuke bomb.
Okay.
Nuke bombs produce heat, lots of heat, and. As for the fallout, I have a diagram in my book of the fallout from the Chernobyl plant blowing up. And, ask, could they have kept Chernobyl a secret? You can see where, how it spread around the globe.
Sure.
And so if you used nukes in 9/11, people in every other nation would have, been measuring it.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
there was none.
Absolutely, and to try and sort of answer the question a little bit more, people will have to go and research about cold fusion. They will have to, if they want to, email me at ad.johnson@ntlworld.com or look at my website and use the contact button. I can direct them to some more information about those things. The reason being that you don't, you know, you hear a lot about nukes almost daily, you know, in on the news and stuff, but you never hear about this other type of nuclear energy, which was discovered in, for example, cold fusion, sonofusion, the experiments that John Hutchinson has done, and there's various other experiments where anomalous nuclear effects have been measured, but they're not, you know, written up in sort of scientific journals as prominently as other experiments with fallout, you know. And I mean, I can tell people about alpha radiation and beta radiation, which are two types of nuclear ionization, and that's one thing, you know, that differs with a nuclear. When a nuclear bomb goes off, you get a lot. Or if you get a leak from a nuclear reactor, you also get a lot of ionizing radiation. That's what it's called. But the sort of nuclear effects which were created at the World Trade Center and in John Hutchinson's experiments, they don't create a lot of ionization. They only create very small amounts of it. And they do create some other nuclear products, such as small amounts of tritium. And that's the fingerprint.
Yeah, tritium is often cited, is 55 times normal. A leaking nuclear plant, which, you know, runs on hot fission, that, you know, it's like a million times background levels instead of 55 times. That's a way different order of magnitude. So it's it's above background levels, but not a huge, huge amount. It's definitely above background levels, but that's what you see with, it's the same order of, you know, around the same order of magnitude as what you see with, what was referred to as cold fusion.
And I don't really know if I can state it more clearly, that Stephen E. Jones was involved in cold fusion research in the 1980s and 1990s. He then comes onto the scene in 2005, talking about 9/11 being, you know, and the destruction of the World Trade Center. What are the chances? What are the chances? You know, people go and read up about it.
And promoting 19th century technology.
Yeah, which is used for welding rails together.
Sure,
you know?
Absolutely.
So just go and look at it. Think about it, people. And, sure. You know.
There's another thing I'd like to add at this point that, Jeff Prager and then now Fetzer and now Gordon Duff spiel off this, well, that you had strontium, you had thorium, you had barium, you had lithium. I went and looked up those things. They exist in the natural environment.
Exactly.
Here's a quote. Barium is a silvery white metal which exists in nature only in ores containing mixtures of elements. It combines with other chemicals such as sulfur and carbon and oxygen to form barium compounds. And actually, the European Union just lowered the limit of how much barium you can have in children's toys. In other words, it's so out there that it's even in children's toys. And so they're tightening up the restrictions there. The strontium is a naturally occurring element found in rocks, soil dust, and oil. Naturally occurring strontium is not radioactive and is either referred to as stable strontium or just plain strontium.
Well, most people aren't going to look this stuff up.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So you hear a word like strontium or barium or tritium or whatever, and you think, oh, that's science. That, oh, yeah, that's clever, you know. And people don't actually go and check it. They don't know, you know. They don't look up what the jargon means. They're bamboozled by jargon. And I can, at this point, using the word bamboozled, I can recommend a good website, which is debamboozled.com. Well, there's a chap called Adam, and he's put together a lot of compelling graphics which summarise some of what we've been talking about in the context
and
of...
Let me add, he's an engineer also.
Right, right.
Indeed, okay.
So debamboozled.com.
Thank you. All righty, let's take a caller. We've had one that's been on for almost an hour. Jeff. Jeff?
Hi, Deanna. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, Jeff.
Hi, Dr. Woods. Hi, Andrew.
Hi.
Deanna, the stuff I emailed you about the Pentagon aliens and occult ether physics in 2010 with that 1941 welding manual, do you ever remember looking at any of that stuff?
Yes. Okay. That's been like 3 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. So on page 60 of the 1941 atomic welding torch, you know, they say the theoretical temperature of atomic hydrogen flame is found to be 7254 degrees Fahrenheit.
Mm-hmm.
William Lyon in those two books basically talks about this Stephen Jones character, actually in his historical thing of the Tesla cover-up, information-wise.
Oh.
You'll find some very interesting things tidbit-wise. But what I wanted to tie together is when you look at essentially the Hutchison effect, Dr. Wood, have you studied Eric P. Dollard's transmission line theory work?
Some, but not, I need to see stuff in person. I haven't been there.
That's okay. Well, at the Free Energy Conference, William Lyon and Eric were there, and I talked with both of them a little bit. But Eric demonstrated his dual Tesla wave coil that sets up an interference pattern that generates a cosmic, he calls it a cosmic induction generator. Essentially, it's a vortex that makes a freestanding plasma. So you might want to go in part 7 of the 2014 energy science thing from Bendini and Peter Lindemann.
Have you read my book?
Yes, I have. I gave it away about a year or so ago. But I'm just saying that this is something new that combines, you know, it's not the Tesla coil and the Van de Graaff or the Hutchison effect, but it's very similar to, you know, combine someone else's work, you know, besides, you know, this other stuff. So I'm just saying that...
Yeah, it's still, the phenomena are the phenomena. I also use tornadoes as a demonstration.
Right.
There's lots of demonstrations out there.
Right. This shows a cosmic freestanding vortex, and the thing runs at 1.6, it's licensed at 1.6 megahertz, about 1,000 watts, but the two interfere constructively, so they'll show your interference patterns, you know, in the thing, and it's kind of cute, but I just wanted to put that in, and if you look at those other things,
thanks.
I think you'll find some stuff. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. All righty, we're going to a break, and we'll be right back after a word from our sponsors. All righty, we are back. This is Deanna. Our guests are Dr. Judy Wood. Her websites are drjudywood.com and wheredidthetowersgo.com. And Andrew Johnson, his website is checktheevidence.com. And he wrote 9/11, Finding the Truth. And Dr. Wood's book, of course, is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Okay, let's quickly take another phone call. Alan in Texas. Alan, welcome.
Yeah, good afternoon. Great show. I have Judy Woods' book and have gained an awful lot from it. The card with the aerial photograph in there is indeed something that you can spend hours looking at. But I think what is most telling about that is most people are unaware that all seven buildings went down on 9/11.
Wonderful that you brought that up. Excellent.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, most people just that are uninformed, they just think of, you know, the two main towers. Anyway, I gave your book to a high school physics teacher here about 6-8 months ago, and he gave back to me. He said, well, I just disagree with her theory and her physics. And I said, well, please write down the points. Anyway, I'm still waiting to get that list. So...
That's excellent. There's somebody I know around here. I loaned my book to, and they took it to work with them. And the fellow she works with, you know, said, "Oh, you've been, you know, taking in too many of these conspiracy theories." And then she showed her the book and said, "Well, I guess I have, but can you show me in here where I was, you know, misguided and steered off track?" Yeah, you know, show me where there's errors in here, because I've really been taken in by this. And loaned them the book, and they brought the book back a couple weeks later. You know, I just handed it back. I couldn't find anything.
Yeah, that's basically what he did with me. But I'm going to keep pressing him, because I've just hired him to tutor. We homeschool our kids, and I've got two boys and starting their senior year now. And he's going to be the tutor here in our homeschool sessions. And so I'm going to press him some more. No, I need to have that list of where you disagree with Dr. Woods.
Yeah.
And I said, I need that list, and I need exactly how you disagree with
Fantastic.
Her.
Fantastic.
So anyway, so I may be emailing you with his,
I bet it'll be a real short list if he can.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I still haven't seen this list.
And a little note, post-it note.
Great program, and I'll let you get some other callers in.
Yeah, thank you so much. You really brightened up my day.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
There's no thinking people out there. Great.
Exactly. All righty. Let's see. A couple questions. Let's see. Okay. What do you attribute the steam-like haze to, Dr. Wood?
Well, I've got a section in my book or even a chapter where it's been analyzed. And it has all the various, you know, particles of that were in the building breaking down, including some organic material, which shows it isn't breaking down from high heat, because you wouldn't have organic material in there.
Right.
And it's to the on the order of 1/100th of the size of red blood cells, which is about the size of DNA. Now show me a bomb or a rock and a hammer, you know, they could pound stuff into that fine of size. It's almost down the atomic level.
DNA, that brings up another thought altogether. I mean, that's pretty small. I mean, that's minuscule.
One 1/100th of the size of red blood cells. In other words, people inhale it into their lungs, it goes directly into their bloodstream. And it probably crosses the blood-brain barrier.
Of course it would, yes.
Wow. So there's no question as to, you know, people are dying from, you know, various health issues.
Sure. Wow.
The nuke types say, well, somebody's dying of cancer, so therefore that proves it was nuked. Well, Peter Jennings was down at the site, and he died of cancer. Does that prove it was nukes? He admitted he started smoking again. So, yeah, 9/11 caused his death because he started getting so nervous, he started smoking more.
Wow.
And he died of lung cancer from smoking.
Wow.
But just because somebody dies of cancer doesn't mean it's a nuke.
Sure.
You gotta show that connection.
Sure. Alrighty, let's take another phone call quickly. Nancy in California. Nancy.
Hi, I am a little turned off that you just bash Stephen Jones and other people you don't agree with. I've read his peer-reviewed papers. Do you have any peer-reviewed papers, Judy?
Yes, I do. And I was the first person to present my research at an engineering conference. I was invited through peer review. That was in 2006.
What is your educational background?
Structural engineering, civil engineering, engineering mechanics, which is applied physics, and a PhD in materials engineering science. And I have over 40 years of experience in forensic engineering and science.
Can I just add something here, please?
Sure.
It was actually me that was talking about Stephen E. Jones, not Dr. Wood. So I think those remarks should be asked of me. And
well,
if you were to read my book, if you were to read my book, 9/11 Finding the Truth, you would understand more about Dr. Stephen E. Jones and what he's been up to. And also the article to which I referred earlier on regarding the English woman that wrote to me, you know, that's something which I think you would get out a lot out of if you actually studied the available evidence.
What has he been up to?
Well, he's been up to basically mischaracterizing things and basically telling little white lies about things. And if you go and read the article, you will find out what those little white lies are. In fact, they're not really very white.
I listened to him speak, and I think you're up in the night. I think you and Judy Wood are...
Have you read the article to which I've referred?
No, I have not.
Right. Now, let me tell you that I actually was invited to join Scholars for 9/11 Truth by Stephen E. Jones in 2005. And I also was one of the people that read his paper in 2005, and I thought that Stephen E. Jones was an honest scientist. I trusted his credentials. I later found out that he was lying, and I was quite upset about that. And I don't like coming on radio programs such as this and telling the truth about him. It actually makes me quite uncomfortable. But my discomfort is not going to stop me from telling the truth about what is a hugely important matter that people like him are involved in covering up. Do you understand that at all?
All I find is your book, but can you tell me about your background? I want to know more about you.
My background is all on my website.
I have a question I'd like to ask Nancy.
Okay.
A serious question. And I would like to get an honest answer to it. Do you believe that, or do you understand or think that those who planned 9/11 just forgot to plan a cover-up?
I would like to get my answer answered before I answer yours. Mr. Johnson, I would like to know more about your background, please.
My background is all on my website, right? My background is that I'm a tutor for the Open University in the UK, which is a part-time tutoring position. Okay, so I have a background of 20 years in software engineering. I did a degree in computer science and physics. How much more would you like me to give you?
I think that you're more qualified than Stephen Jones.
No, I'm not more qualified. I haven't done work at Los Alamos National Laboratories, which is where they developed the A-bomb, right? I haven't done work there. Does somebody's qualifications mean that they're going to be more truthful? If I have a PhD in something, does that mean I'm going to be more truthful about something than if I don't have a PhD?
Are you calling Stephen Jones a liar?
Yes, I am calling him a liar.
Well,
you can go and read about that on my website if you care to look at the evidence of why I should make such a statement.
Okay, folks, we're going to break. I think it's a good time for a break here. We'll be back
probably
in 3 minutes. Alrighty, welcome back. This is Deanna, and our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood. Her website, drjudywood.com, and wheredidthetowersgo.com. Dr. Wood's book is Where Did the Towers Go? The Evidence of Directed Free Energy Technology on 9/11. Our other guest is Andrew Johnson. His website is checktheevidence.com. Alrighty. We have Jimmy from Nevada. Jimmy, welcome.
I had an important question for Dr. Wood, and I guess it can apply to Mr. Johnson as well. Are you guys Gentiles or Jews?
I don't know how that has a bearing on anything. Sorry, you first, Dr. Wood.
No, does that have to do with the evidence? Does that mean the towers are still there?
I think your stammering says a multitude, though.
I'd like to talk about evidence, and this is a diversion away from the evidence. Remember, if you don't like to lie behind door number one, they show you the lie behind door number two, and then door number three, and door number four. Anything to distract you from turn around, look at the wide open field of evidence right behind you. And I see a distraction away from the wide open field of evidence.
I agree with that, but I'd like to say for myself, caller, that I was brought up a Roman Catholic, and by the age of 14, I'd got bored of going to church, and I've since discovered an awful lot about the various branches of Christianity, which make me very uncomfortable. And I've also learned a lot about Zionism and all those types of things. But those particular things don't really have much of a bearing on most of what we've discussed tonight. Possibly it might come into the picture somewhere, for example, going back to our friend Dr. Stephen E. Jones, who's a Mormon, and you look, for example, at the Mormon religion and how it's borrowed a lot of symbolism from Freemasonry. I know bits and pieces about that, but I'm certainly no expert. But that's not really the subject of our conversation tonight. So, you know, that's all I've got to say on the matter.
All right. Thank you, Jimmy. All right. Let's go to Robert in Missouri. Robert?
Greetings. You know, I've watched this conflict with Dr. Woods, you know.
Wood. No S. Wood.
Wood, yeah, Dr. Wood. I watched the conflict between the various camps in the 9/11 community about how this operation was carried out. And, you know, I'm open to your ideas. I keep my mind open constantly. And, it seems like this conflict about how the operation was carried out gets us so down into this minutia to where we don't look at the characters involved, the Larry Silversteins, the Ronald Lauders, the Dov Zockheims, and everybody else. You know, I've read a lot of books on 9/11. I try to keep a wide macro vision about this operation. You know, you had the head of the Mossad saying decades ago that those two buildings were going down, et cetera, et cetera. And it just so happens the United States and the Israelis are the people at the forefront of the technology of which you speak. And so there's so much evidence of connections and characters and everything else that we get caught up in the minutiae and we get into this infighting about how the operation was carried out. And then we lose sight.
I've got a question for you. Thanks. I've got a question. Do you think those who planned 9/11 forgot to plan a cover-up?
Oh, there's no way. There's so many people that were employed immediately. And, I mean, I think this operation was planned for decades. And so...
Why do you call it infighting? Why do you define something as infighting? How do you... In order for something to be infighting, people have to have the same objective in mind. If people have mutually exclusive objectives, it's not infighting.
Can I add something as well? There are a couple of things I'd like to add to this, to what you're saying here, or sort of respond with. Firstly, the background of Dr. Wood and myself is primarily in the scientific realm. That's primarily what we're talking about, because that's what we're qualified to talk about. Our qualifications are different, but we have that much in common at least. So some of the figures to which you refer, we're well aware of those figures, such as the Larry Silversteins and the Rudy Giulianis and all these other characters. But if you wanted to go after those people, you're going to need to have some evidence about what their role exactly was. And that certainly isn't clear enough, I don't think, to say, for example, build a court case or any kind of legal action. Not that that would go anywhere, because we know that the court system is controlled by secret interests anyway when it comes to important matters. And you can look at the history of Dr. Wood's case to see that in motion. So, as I tried to explain earlier in the program, my understanding has been, and I think Dr. Wood would agree with me, that underpinning all this is energy. And everyone in the whole world needs energy, from the starving communities in Africa that have no clean drinking water to, you know, the richest Saudi oil sheikhs who drive around in their 50 different Rolls Royces or 365 Rolls Royces, one for every day of the year, you know, or whatever it is. They need energy too, and they use energy. And that is one of the areas that we all need. So all this talk about infighting and perhaps divisiveness, for example, we have Susan Lindauer coming onto our Facebook group that somebody has set up to talk about some of the things that I'm talking about tonight or this afternoon. And she said that me calling Richard Gage a liar was divisive. Well, of course it's divisive, because if you want the truth and you've got a liar in your midst, that's going to be divisive, isn't it? So what alternative do we have when we've got these liars actually saying, for example, like Dr. Wood doesn't talk about thermite, she doesn't talk about bombs in her book. You can look at the contents page and see that that's listed, and I have a copy of a check from written that's signed by Richard Gage, which was payment for the Where Did the Towers Go book. And he's going around on public tours claiming that Dr. Wood doesn't talk about thermite in her book. You know, that's a lie.
Can I respond? Here's the thing. I think everybody in the whole movement says that it's a false flag. You agree with the false flag attack, don't you?
Hold on a minute.
I'm a scientist
who has conducted a scientific report.
You're a scientist. That means you're a smart person. So that means you can't look into the other aspects of the thing, the circumstantial evidence, the research that other people do. You're a smart woman, so you just want to stay into your little world, and you don't want to go off and find out more about who did it. That seems like a cop-out to me.
Oh, I have. I've done more than any other person has. I filed a federal case, and only like 5 people supported it. And if that case had gone forward, if there was enough people who supported it, we would have under oath the person who knows who did it.
Richard Gage and the other groups that you talk about, the other parts of this truth movement, if that's what you want to call it, which we're not really part of, as Dr. Wood tried to say, they haven't done that. They've not done that. So, you know, if you want to pile this criticism onto us, that's fair enough. You know, you can say all that you like, but if you actually go and look at the facts and the evidence, then you'll see that what you're saying is not, to be honest, it's not really correct, you know? I mean, you can just go and look at the evidence and you can see that what we're saying is true, you know? That's the whole point of this.
People who talked about, who were in Richard Gage's group, who talked about my work, were banned from the group that they couldn't spread that information.
And that's all on my website. You know, you can go and read all of this if you want. If you don't want to read it, that's fine. You know, we put this information there, or I certainly put the information there, and people can take it or leave it, frankly, you know, because we don't have any power. We don't have any power in this, only our own minds and our own small resources and the friends that have helped us. That's all we've got, you know. We're not connected into all these secret networks, you know, that flipping do make atomic bombs in Los Alamos like the people that Jones are connected with do. You know, those are the people that he's connected to, and that's all in the public record. You know,
we also don't have the finances to pay for a $650,000 ad campaign.
So, you know, to kind of imply, for example, that, you know, we're not going to go after Larry Silverstein or any of these other people that you mentioned, you know, I mean, that's just ridiculous. Even if we wanted to, we don't have those sorts of resources anyway. You know, I'm well aware of all those stories, and so is Dr. Wood. We just choose not to talk about them because we don't think it's as important as what we know. You know, that's the point.
All righty.
You can't take somebody to court on speculation.
Right.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are going to a quick break here momentarily. And then I'd like to talk a little bit more about the corrupt system, and we'll talk about it when you come back. Be back in 3. All righty, we are back. Our guests today are Dr. Judy Wood and Andrew Johnson. Just a couple of quick questions. We were talking about the corrupt system. If the court system had really been serving the people's interest, would your Key Tam case gone a different way?
Oh, yes, for sure. But even more importantly, even the way it was, if the truther movement had stood behind it,
indeed,
it would have gone a different way. If 100,000 people were standing in the street outside the courthouse, do you think those judges could have gotten away with actually stating they were ignoring the law in order to dismiss the case? They stated in the written decision. They acknowledged they were ignoring the law so they could dismiss the case. Now, a street full of people watching this case would have cared. Instead, the truth movement celebrated the demise of this case. What's with that? You know,
exactly.
Didn't they want it in court? It was in court.
And that we're talking about the Supreme Court.
Right. Well, what I'm talking about, getting people in the streets, that was from the Court of Appeals in New York City.
Okay. All right.
We had 8 minutes.
Sure. If NIST were working for the people's best interest, would they have appointed a company that develops free energy weapons to serve on the Board of Inquiry to evaluate or rather cover the evidence?
I don't want to get into speculation of what and so forth, of what ifs.
Right, but the fact is they've covered it up.
Yeah, that's true. That's easier to answer. And they were informed that that's what was going on, and they were happy with that.
Yes.
You know, they had a gun to their head and had to.
Sure. Amazing.
Now, we don't know under what circumstances, you know, that went through, but it's a fact that the contractors on that report were developers and manufacturers of energy weapons who also held a contract with the U.S. government to know everything about any weapon of mass destruction that is being developed or has been developed anywhere. So they would be able to recognize what technology it was, not only that, but whose technology it was.
Right. But going to the court, and we know that the courts, as Andrew mentioned, the court system is corrupt. But that is really the only option that anyone has.
We need to make it work. So if you have a whole bunch of people, more people than, you know, if you had all the citizens in the U.S., you know, in the streets jumping up and down, that would change it.
Right.
In order to not change it, we need people to just go away. There's nothing you can do. Throw your hands up and go back to, you know, nothing to see here. That's
sure.
How it keeps going.
Sure. So they proved that they were corrupt by doing what they did.
Not necessarily. I'll say that these judges were respectful. They didn't have to put that in their written decision stating they acknowledged that this law applied to my case, but they're ignoring the law, so they could dismiss the case. That was a sign of respect of me. Now think of the alternative. If they had let this case go forward, and it's only, you know, us five people who supported it, that's suicide. They're going to get suicide on the way home that day. That's certain death.
Right.
This thing is so big, you can't base it on, you need to have a majority of people behind you and supporting you. So having the truther movement not support this was a big deal. That's what killed the case. The judges couldn't afford to suggest I don't have evidence of that, but I think it's pretty clear that if those judges had allowed the case to go on forward, they wouldn't have survived the next day.
Right.
I think, you know, these judges obviously are intelligent people, and they know, I think probably most of them know how the system works, and there are probably a few of them that are not corrupted, but they know how the system works, and they know when they've got to keep their head down, you know, and maybe just kind of go along to get along more than they should really in terms of their oath and everything. And you look at what, you know, you're up against, which is some groups which are connected to the military-industrial complex. You know, these are the hugely powerful groups, the most powerful on the planet. They've got, you know, armies, they've got weaponry, you know, and this sort of thing, and connections into that. These are the people that develop these weapons of mass destruction, you know, that are behind all of this. How are you going to actually reason with them and get them to admit their role, such as it was, in the destruction of the World Trade Center. Are they ever going to admit that publicly? Of course they're not. Of course they're not. You know. And some people have said to us, oh, you were naive with that court case. Well, no, we weren't. You know.
We did what we could do. If you don't support a system, then you're part of its demise.
Yeah. So you have to take whatever opportunities you can to do something, which was what was done.
And you know? And if the so-called truth movement were actually trying to prove you wrong, this would have been the best way to do it, would be to support what you were doing, and then they could say, see, she was wrong. But the fact that they didn't support you indicates, well, some interesting things.
It does. Absolutely it does. You know, and the fact that they've tried to, some of the groups have tried to sort of suggest that they were going to start a court case or it was about to be done, and it's not actually been done yet, at least not, well, in fact, I don't think it has been done, not even in any real form. You know, there's been one other case, which was April Gallup's case, but that was dismissed with prejudice, I think, wasn't it?
Right, because it was all about theories of what happened to the towers. It had nothing to do with the case in hand, which was the airplane at the Pentagon.
Right, or the explosion.
The George Bush put thermite in the towers. That's what they entered in their thing, which has nothing to do with it. And the reason why they were also sanctioned is because they appealed it and were calling the judges some bad names. Well, it's like they're begging to be sanctioned.
Yes.
And there's another case, too. It was about the guy not paying his
license.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in the UK. There was this guy in the UK. I briefly mentioned that case. And he basically had not paid his television license fee, which is a legal requirement here, and you can get fined if you don't pay it. And he chose to fight the case in court, and his defence was that he wasn't paying his TV license because that went to the BBC, you know, the British Broadcasting Corporation, and they hadn't broadcast truthful information about 9/11, they were supporting terrorism. So you don't want to pay money to an organization supporting terrorism, and that was
your electric bill either, because it powers the TV.
I suppose so, but you know, so he—that was the basis on which he fought. He defended his case, but and then guess who he called in for his witness? He called in Niels Harrit, who is the prominent Danish chemist who talks about thermite being put in the towers. Yeah, I wrote to this guy, who was called Tony Rook, and I told him about Dr. Wood's court case and, you know, the significance of it. Never heard back from the guy. So, in other words, this cover-up is international. And again, I've written a whole article about this, how it happened in the UK, and there's another guy involved with this called Ian Henschel, who publicly, who said to me in email...
No evidence of 9/11 was allowed in the case.
Correct. No evidence
allowed.
Because
it was about whether or not, did you pay your fee or not, yes or no?
But Ian Henschel, who runs this site called Reinvestigate 9/11 in the UK, he wrote to me an email that I, Andrew Johnson, was the biggest single cause, personally, biggest single cause of the collapse of the UK 9/11 truth movement. I got that in an email from him, and that's on my website.
Oh, that was powerful.
Yeah, that was after, you know, I wrote to him, or I wrote to Tony Rook about this, or it was around the time I wrote to Tony Rook about this TV license case that I referred to. So, you know, this is how the cover-up works. It's quite subtle at times. And you know, going back to the lady that called in Nancy from Texas, you know, what exactly was she trying to say? You know, what were her affiliations? Why did she seem so upset about this Stephen E. Jones? Is she a friend of his or a student or something? You know, she didn't really say.
Sure.
You know?
I mean, I would just want to, you know, without being accusatory, well, I probably wouldn't call in and ask that question, actually. I would just
one thing I would like to say is that you know, I've never talked about ray beams from outer space. Why has Stephen Jones conveyed that and spread it so far? And
exactly.
That's what really gets in the way of people looking at my book.
That seems to be a lie.
Yep, right. It is a lie.
Yes. All righty. Well, thank you so much, very, very much, Dr. Wood and Andrew Johnson. Thank you for being on the program today.
Thank you so much for having
us.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And bye-bye, listeners. Thank you for joining me today, and we'll talk with you next Sunday.
and you could join me tomorrow. Take care. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.